I definitely believe that this is the most outrageous, miserable failure on the part of the FBI in my lifetime.
This case reeks of CYA from one side to the other.
I don't think something like this is going to be solved until all the information comes out and people stop trying to cover themselves and start telling the truth.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hello and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case. This is Jim Clementi, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor and writer-producer of CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
Hi, everybody. It's Francie Hakes, former state and federal prosecutor. Jim, we have a brand new guest today. I'm so excited. We haven't had him on before. I hear he's a legend. And his name is...
Ray Carr. How are you, everybody? Thanks for having me today. I'm a 26-year veteran of the FBI. I started out in Buffalo, New York in 1989, and then made my way to Philly at the end of 1991 and spent my time in Philadelphia until I retired in 2014.
Wait, awesome, Jim, Ray. Don't we know someone else who worked out of the Philadelphia area? One Jim Fitzgerald. Do you know Fitz, Ray?
I do. He's a very, very good friend. I've known him for many years. I just was with him last week. We looked at a cold case together.
Oh, really?
Well, and it was, in fact, Fitz who sent me your name when I said, hey, guys, we need some people to interview that we haven't talked to before. Fitz said, oh, I know one. His name's Ray Carr. So tell us a little bit about your bureau career. What were some of your assignments there in Buffalo and in Philadelphia?
I was on a violent crime squad in Buffalo, and it was pretty interesting. Within 9 months, I was up on a wire, my own wire.
Wow.
An international auto theft ring. And it lasted about a little over a year. And then before things even came to an end, I wound up transferring down to Philadelphia in 91. And I was on the bank robbery squad, which was very, very active at that time. We had probably somewhere in the area of, 300 to 400 bank robberies and over 26 armored car robberies in 1991, 1992. And that's how I first met Fitz.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Robbery case in New York.
Right. We were Jim Fitz and I were both on the bank robbery task force in New York, which also housed the sexual exploitation of children task force in New York.
Also known as the GEMS. The GEMS work
the
together.
GEMS. And we actually had 2,000 bank robberies in the first year, 1987. Most of them were note jobs. There weren't as many, very violent bank robberies at the time. But we did at least a bunch of armored car robberies too. I think you probably had more armored car robberies than we did.
That was the big thing was the armored car robberies and the bank takeovers. They were coming. Taking over the bank as they were opening the bank, they went and take over and had them go into the vaults. And they were the most violent, that were working out of Philadelphia at that time.
Wow.
Wow. And so how long were you in Philadelphia, Ray?
Well, I spent my entire career there, the rest of my career, until I retired in 14, so 22 years. But in 96, I moved out to what they call a resident agency, which is like a satellite office of the Philadelphia division, where we were responsible for two counties. And, you think, well, that's not really that big. But when you think of the two counties, there were more people in the two counties than there were in the whole state of Delaware. So we had people in those two counties. Delaware.
Well, also, when you're in a resident agency, you have to do all the crimes. You can't really specialize.
That's correct.
So you have even more responsibility.
That's correct.
And so what RA was it?
Newtown Square.
Okay. So what counties were they?
Delaware were County they and Chester County in Newtown Square, Pennsylvania. So it took a lot into, and there's 108 police departments in those two counties.
Wow.
At least at
180?
108.
108. Wow.
So,
well, I what I wanted to do today, Ray, since we have you, big veteran of the FBI, and of course, Jim, veteran of the FBI, I wanted to talk to you guys about a case that's been in the news that's really sort of ripped from the headlines. And that's, once again, we're talking about the Larry Nassar case, because just this week on Capitol Hill, several gymnasts who were victims of Larry Nassar, Olympic gymnasts, who were victims of Larry Nassar, testified about the FBI investigation. And there was an inspector general's report. And I wanted to talk to you guys about what you think about what Director Chris Wray actually called dereliction of duty when he was speaking to the Senate yesterday. So I wanted to kind of get in with you guys about what's happening, what you think about it, and let's try to solve the problem and make sure everyone understands what happened so we can make sure it never happens again.
Number one, I don't think Director Wray went far enough. And I'm going to tell you, I don't think something like this is going to be solved until all the information comes out and people stop trying to cover themselves and start telling the truth. It's a black eye. I shouldn't say it's a black eye. I should say that the FBI is in a body cast. It's really took a shot with this. One of the most important things we can do as law enforcement is protect the most vulnerable. And who's more vulnerable than children? And we failed to do that. We failed to do that. And that's bad. And it's sad. And I think that there's not only ethical issues in this case, but I think there's criminal implications as well. And I think the American people deserve transparency, and I think they deserve the truth of how, so that we don't fail again.
Right. I agree with you, Ray. I believe there should be an independent counsel appointed to investigate this, investigate both the ethical violations and the criminal violations or the potential criminal violations. Obviously we can't make any judgments about it, but, apparently DOJ needs to look into it and to make a determination as to what actually happened. Francie, but if DOJ declines prosecution, does that mean that there can't be a revisitation of that issue and reopen if it's still within the statute of limitations?
Yeah, for sure. There's a 5-year statute of limitations on most federal crimes. False statement, 18 U.S.C. 1001 is one of those, Jim. And as long as it's within the statute, which, you know, this incident happened 2015 to 2016. I'm not exactly sure when the inspector general's investigation finished, but I think the report came out this past summer. So it seems to me that there may still be criminal conduct inside that 5-year statute of limitations, because it's when the criminal conduct takes place that matters. So if there was a lie or a false statement to the inspector general, the clock starts running then, when that lie happens, and it runs for 5 years. So just because DOJ has said they weren't going to prosecute doesn't mean they can't turn around now and decide to prosecute.
And I guess the only possible issue would be if they decline prosecution, and as a result of that, any defendant or somebody who would be a defendant relied on that and was not given their Fifth Amendment right.
Yeah, the Cosby argument that the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania was making. Yeah, Jim, I think here my understanding of the way things happened was that the inspector general referred the case to DOJ for prosecution as he was finishing up his report, and then his report came out. So I don't think that the declination of prosecution occurred before the interviews. So I don't think there's any issue of some sort of detrimental reliance upon the promise not to prosecute. I don't think there was any immunity offered in this case. I don't think those declinations happened before the interviews. So hopefully DOJ will revisit this. Somebody should be revisiting this. And it's one of the things that the Deputy Attorney General ought to be doing right now is revisiting it. What's happened? Who made the decision and why? And was there an OPR, you know, Office of Professional Responsibility investigation? That's what Director Ray implied yesterday, was that there was some sort of OPR investigation. And then they're under all these obligations not to talk until it's finished. And even then it has to be confidential. So I'm glad there was an Inspector General investigation, because that does become public at least. But there's a lot to unpack here. So let's just get into it.
I definitely believe that this is the most outrageous, miserable failure on the part of the FBI in my lifetime. I can't believe that. We don't know enough about, especially about the LA Indianapolis interactions. I don't know whether the SAC of LA was like, no, we can't step on their toes or whatever. We can only deal with what we have. But still, it should have been sent back to headquarters, right? Right, Ray?
Yeah, I mean,
shouldn't headquarters have been notified, and wouldn't headquarters then, CAC unit like and headquarters?
No, just a case of this stature always has a headquarters, always has a hand in it.
Yeah.
With the field division. So I'm not sure it stops with the SAC. And if it doesn't go back to headquarters, the substantive desk back in headquarters. So there's that's why I say, you know, everybody's concerned about CYA, and that's why everything's being kept quiet. And that's where the frustration comes in. It's a disgrace.
Yeah, just for our listeners. So the way the FBI works, the FBI headquarters doesn't generally do any actual investigations. There was a little bit of a detour taken after 9/11. I think FBI headquarters actually ran that investigation. They brought people from New York down to Washington to conduct investigation there, but to run the investigation there. But generally, what FBI headquarters does, it has these different units that are programs. Okay, they cover the different violations that the FBI investigates. And so they kind of supervise what's going on in the field in various divisions. And this is because you need to have somebody looking over the top that sees what's going on in all 50 states and in all of our legal attachés around the world, so that there's some kind of continuity and there's some kind of what didn't happen in this case and what should have happened in this case, some kind of oversight to make sure that nobody falls through cracks, that nothing like this kind of thing happens. So I'm just really confused how FBI headquarters was not notified by Indianapolis immediately. Well, I guess because one, they never did any 302s within the requisite 5 days, right? They waited 17 months to do a 302 on investigative interview of a victim of a child sex crimes. Just outrageous. It's just impossible to say that was some, you know, slight oversight or something. There had to have been some reason why that wasn't done. And what it was probably done as a CYA a year or more later, because they realized, oh my God, this is actually the cat's out of the bag. We got to do something to friggin' document what we did. And that's just outrageous.
Yeah, I don't understand the whole thing. One interesting tidbit, too, is that in the Southern District of Indiana, where this was originated or should have been originated or where the complaint was originated, sits the AUSA who's just retired in June of this year, who at the time this was going on was probably the preeminent federal prosecutor on child exploitation in the entire country. He is a nationally recognized expert on child exploitation, and he sits in the Southern District of Indiana. So I don't know whether he was involved. I'm not going to mention his name because, again, I don't even know if he was involved in this decision. The Inspector General has email traffic between an AUSA and the people in the Indianapolis Field Division of the FBI discussing the case. And the understanding of the U.S. Attorney's Office there was that Indianapolis field office would refer this to Michigan. And so maybe that was all he thought he or she thought was necessary. But it is odd to me that you have an office that contains someone who, by the way, works very closely with his ICAC task force there, state and local detectives and the FBI on child exploitation in Indianapolis. And yet it was out of Indianapolis that this crazy screw up happened. It makes no sense to me. It's really hard to understand. And why I personally was disappointed that the Deputy Attorney General, Lisa Monaco, who I know and worked with at the Deputy Attorney General's office when she was the principal assistant deputy attorney general before she went to the White House as Obama's, I think, national security advisor. She's now the DAG, and she didn't come to the hearing yesterday that these gymnasts testified in to explain DOJ's conduct in not, you know, prosecuting someone for a false statement charge. As we've discussed, nobody's been prosecuted. And so the gymnasts were really upset that no representative of, you know, the DOJ side of the House was even there. And now DOJ is saying, well, the attorney general is going to testify before that committee next month. It's probably one of the normal oversight testimonies of the attorney general, and it will be on a wide swath of issues, not about this. There's just no, what you said, Ray, is so right. This case reeks of CYA from one side to the other. You know, the only people who covered themselves in any kind of approbation that we can admire are the state and locals I think it was actually the Michigan State Police who started this investigation and got a search warrant and discovered the child pornography.
Michigan State University Police.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's what I mean. Yes. The university police. I mean, they at least took the case and started investigating and got a search warrant. And, you know, Nassar was then arrested at some point. But I just, you know, DOJ, FBI fails up one side and down the other on this case. And I don't understand. And they're still failing. They're still failing today. I was not impressed with Ray's testimony yesterday. I was, you know, I'm glad he's outraged about it. But what's different? How? I mean, and then DOJ doesn't even show up.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
I only saw part of Ray's testimony, and I've only met the man once. I don't know him that well, and obviously this is something that he has sort of inherited for the most part, right? He was not the director of the FBI at the time that this
was all
broke.
No, he became director in 2017.
Right. So, he's only sort of, you know.
He was the director during the entire period, Jim, of the Inspector General's investigation.
Right.
And, you know, he says that after he became director, he puts no time on it. He launched an investigation into what happened. Well, in the meantime, you've had this SAC retire and so therefore escape the jurisdiction of the inspector general. So I don't know what Ray's doing, but he's not doing a lot. Right.
Well, I just think, you know, I don't, obviously we can't make any determinations about criminal cases and so on and so forth. Obviously there are a lot of different moving parts there. I don't know why DOJ hasn't indicted anyone. I don't know if they're in the middle of investigating it or reviewing indictments now.
Declined.
Who knows?
No, they've declined prosecution. Yeah.
And we have no idea why.
The two referrals from the inspector general, where the inspector general said there may be criminal conduct of lying during the inspector general's investigation, those cases were declined, I think, this past summer. Or maybe I'm trying to remember. One I read was declined in 2020, and one was declined this year, I think. That's my understanding. So prosecution was declined in any of the false statement cases. So that's a DOJ, and Ray said that yesterday, that was a DOJ decision. Obviously, the FBI doesn't decide whether or not to bring a prosecution. They may advise DOJ on whether they think one is merited, but it's up to the prosecutors inside the Department of Justice to decide. And I guess that those people have decided not to file a 1001 prosecution, and I don't understand it. It seems, according to the IG's report anyway, it seems pretty clear you've got criminal conduct, and they've declined to prosecute. I think it just two tiers of justice bother me. And lots of criminals, lots of people get prosecuted for 1001. And when the insiders don't get prosecuted for it, it makes everyone look bad. It makes everyone distrust law enforcement. And I hate that.
I agree with you. It looks bad. And it makes it appear that there are two different types of justice systems in this country. And that should not be the case. The people who are enforcing the laws of this country should be held to an even higher standard than regular citizens, not a lower standard. And so that is one thing that has to be dealt with. The other thing is that I have, in my own career, and while I was in the BAU, seen cases in which medical doctors have been accused of being of sexually victimizing their patients and children who were their patients. And there's a difficulty because of HIPAA and because of, I think, just the, I don't know, the malleability of where the line is between treatment and abuse, that I think Nassar actually played very well. I mean, he took videos of him doing these things. He told people he was doing these things. He wasn't just hiding it. So there may have been some confusion on the part of some of these people who aren't experienced in investigating child sex crimes about whether or not this could even be a crime. How could a pediatrician actually commit crimes when you know, you tell your children, oh, only mommy and daddy and the doctor is allowed to touch you there. You know, those kinds of things, they hide behind that to actually perpetrate their crimes. And so that is something that actually needed expertise. That is something that they should have called Ken Lanning, and he would have in 5 minutes. Well, he would have in 2 hours explained to them all the details of why that could be a crime and why it needs to be investigated. So it may be ignorance that actually kicked off this lack of addressing this case, lack of opening a case, lack of following standard FBI procedure. What do you think, Ray?
You know, this reminds me of a case that was in Delaware with Bradley. You remember Bradley, Dr. Bradley? He was a pediatrician
Yes.
in Southern Delaware. And he sexually abused children for years. There's no difference what Nassar did with what Bradley did. I mean, they did the same exact thing. The same exact thing that you're talking about, taking videos of the children that they were doing. He set things up. He groomed these kids just as Nassar did.
And their parents.
And their parents.
The community.
The same exact thing. And now he's in prison for life where he belongs. And but when you look at this Nassar situation, there should be an investigation conducted. You know, there's not only an ethical portion of this, there's a criminal portion of this as well. And I really believe that unless they bring this out and bring this forward, this is going to continue to be an issue that's raised over and over again.
Yeah, it's going to fester. And you know, I just hope that there was no official cover-up, that it was just literally these the incompetence and the self-serving actions of one or two people in Indianapolis. And then I don't know what politically or administratively went on between LA and Indianapolis, but seriously, this has been the most miserable failure of the FBI and protecting children. I mean, this is absolutely one of the FBI's highest priorities. It seems like it sank to the lowest at that point.
Well, I have to draw a parallel here, not for the FBI, but for DOJ with the Epstein matter, Jim. You know, I mean, now my understanding is that the FBI prepared a beautiful, rock solid case against Jeffrey Epstein in the Southern District of Florida back in 2006, 2007, and 2008. And it was the U.S. Attorney's Office who declined to prosecute and shunted it over to the state, where he was simply allowed to plead to misdemeanor charges. And it, you know, you're talking about a time period from 2008 until 2015-16. And yet you've got DOJ still falling down on the job when it comes to protecting children. I mean, to me, there's a huge problem here. It isn't just FBI. It's not just FBI Indianapolis. It's DOJ writ large. Something is wrong when you have decisions like this being made or not being made. What are you saying? Omissions and decisions being made. And then during investigations of those decisions, people are lying. And then not being prosecuted. This is, right. The whole thing is just a travesty.
It is. Ray, when in the Bradley case, he was also claiming that he was doing, you know, basic medical procedures and they were being misinterpreted, right?
Correct.
And
same exact thing. It's identical.
Right. And so, as I recall, that became a real issue because people were actually struggling with, wait a minute. Oh, if this could actually be legitimate, then it's not a crime. And so what do we do here? And that was, I remember that was one of the things, the factors that delayed his investigation and prosecution. And so I think that could possibly be a factor in the Nassar case, but the investigators who actually worked the Bradley case, the investigators who actually are experienced in this area, should have known better and should have known that they need to actually investigate it and interview these victims in detail and then make determinations, not just do one interview over a phone and then decide, I'm not going to do anything else. I'm not even going to document the one interview I did. And Ray, can you just tell us about the work that you did in crimes against children cases?
Believe it or not, how I got involved in that is that nobody else wanted to do it. And
sadly, I believe that.
Well, that was back at the time when the FBI was just getting started up and they had to send someone down to Quantico for training. You know, I'm on a squad with a bunch of old timers that are SWAT guys and you know, they couldn't stand at it, disgusted them to even take a look at that. I, at the time, had little children and I was very, very angry when I looked at these cases. I became very nauseated, frustrated, angered to the point where I said, I can't work these cases like this. So what I did is I got on the phone and who do I call but Ken Lanning? And down to the unit to Ken Lanning. And I says, Ken, how in the hell do you deal with this day in and day out? And he sat down and he talked me off the ledge. And
2 hours? Was it a 2-hour conversation?
No, it was a little bit less
maybe
than
four.
That.
Maybe four.
But he actually, that piece that he sat down with me allowed me to continue working the crimes against children for the next 5 years.
Wow.
Which I did, and brought some great cases. I mean, one of the major cases, which was the biggest at the time, at least in the Eastern District, where we had an engineer that had moved from Colorado, and the movers had discovered pictures, and they were disturbing pictures. And he asked me to look into this. The Philadelphia Sex Crimes Unit came to me and says, hey, we have this. He came from Colorado. Can you take a look at this? We recovered probably more than 5,000 photographs, and we recovered another 1,500 videotapes. And most of the videotapes I'm looking at, Top Gun and some of the other movies, and if you would look in through the movies, spliced in between some of the movies where he was hiding these things, were some of the acts that he had engaged in with himself and others. And we were able to tie it into a child sex ring with some other individuals in different states. And it was one of the biggest cases in the Eastern District at that time.
What was the name of that case?
We didn't title the case. It was just the individual. His name was William Cochran. So it was Cochran versus United States.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's you're talking about Eastern District of Pennsylvania, right?
That's correct, yeah.
And was that was he part of an actual organization of pedophiles or child sex offenders?
Well, you know, with NAMBLA, he was tied in with NAMBLA. He was a member
The North American Man Boy Love Association, by the way.
Correct. And then he
can I just say that sounds so innocent, sort of the title kind of sounds innocent, but really they advocate for child abuse. That's what they do. They advocate
for
the sexual abuse of children.
We were able to get into his phone records, because at the time, there were no cell phones at that time. So we're into his Rolodex and running his toll records and finding the people he's talking to in different states and actually exchanging children, shipping them over. And he had another guy that he would use to recruit victims that would come to him. And that led us to another case, which was Eddie Savitz, who was real big in this area. He engaged kids, and he would bring them to his home, and he would buy their socks and their underwear. And then when we found a storage facility at a storage bin, it was a 8x8 garage. It was full of garbage bags, and the garbage bags were underwear and soiled underwear and soiled socks. And he was probably one of the most egregious people that I had the chance to run into.
Well, we'll have to have you back to talk about that case in detail.
For sure.
Yeah.
There's some other cases, I'm sure. Well, Ray, it's great to see you again and great talking to you. And we're definitely going to have you back right away to talk about more of your cases in detail. But for now, thank you to our listeners and viewers. And this is Best Case, Worst Case, signing off.
Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production produced by Francie Hakes, Josh Murphy, and Jim Clementi at Empire Studios LA. Engineered and edited by Matt Gerbel. Music composed and performed by Simba Tsumba and hosted by Wondery.
You can listen to Best Case, Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you want to do something about child sexual abuse, Darkness to Light can help. Did you know that more than 90% of the time children are sexually abused by someone they know?
Jim, this isn't about stranger danger. It's about learning the true risks. Darkness to Light's training can help prevent, recognize, and react to child sexual abuse in your community.
When you make the decision to get involved, kids can be protected. It starts with you.
visit www.d2l.org to take the training and learn more.
That's D, the number 2, L.org.